The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 504, recorded on June 4th, 2018.
Welcome to the 504th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 337th edition of the Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
And I am Scott Kerr.
I am Jonah Powell.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry, and today a gaming flashback.
Before we get into what you've been playing, we have news items, but there was one news item that was from last week that Scott and TJ were going on about doing this entire huge back and forth in Skype. Regarding the lawsuit between PUBG and Fortnite. So I figured I'd give you guys a chance to discuss that again, since typing about it on Skype was sort of like a waste of material. Who are you talking to? So you might as well just discuss it now before we get into the other stuff.
Oh, yeah, sure. So this was something I covered at Twin Galaxies. PUBG and Fortnite have had a dubious competitive relationship, to say the least, ever since Fortnite Battle Royale came out. They've threatened lawsuits in the past, but apparently Bluehole, who is the Korean representative of the PUBG company, finally filed a lawsuit in Korea to take Epic Games to court over copyright against Fortnite's Battle Royale mode. And that's just hilarious, because there's no way. A, it's a bad PR move. B, even if they win that, Epic created the engine that they created their game with, so like it's poor taste, to say the least.
It's poor sportsmanship, it seems like. I mean, you got these two games that are basically doing the same kind of game mode where you're fighting free-for-all. It's like, I mean, it's almost like, you know, FedEx suing UPS for using trucks. You know, it's like, come on. It doesn't make any sense. You know, because, like, I've seen games use concepts that were seen in other games, and this just seems like a very basic kind of thing that's not really even that unique to have a lawsuit over. You know, like Nina Kanuni had little Pokemon, little monsters that you collected and used, and I didn't see any lawsuits over that.
Well, here's the other thing. Project Darwin is using the same kind of format for its own, and there's another game that's using that as well. And the news items, we're going to find out that Microsoft may be jumping into that pie as well. A little bit of foreshadowing there. So yeah, you can't sue someone over a concept. That's like Doom suing 3D Realms for having deathmatch in Duke Nukem 3D.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's just silly.
It's all about money here.
It doesn't seem like money to me. It seems more like pettiness, and because if it was about money, you wouldn't even start this lawsuit, because I'm going to tell you something. You know who's really happy about this lawsuit? The lawyers. They're going to get a free paycheck. It's like,
oh, yeah.
Can't do it. Okay, pay up, please.
I mean, like, the Bluehole is basically looking at the success that Epic has had with Fortnite, looking at their growing presence and building their own esports scene. I mean, Epic.
And besides announced, which, before we go on, you know, Fortnite didn't start as a Battle Royale mode. I mean, it started up as a co-op, siege, horde sort of thing, you know, which combined the horde gameplay mode of, say, Gears of War with Minecraft, you know?
And they absolutely bandwagoned on top of PUBG's success. They saw that format was working, and they threw their hat in the ring to try to get a piece of that action. There's
you don't
no
see
doubt
Minecraft
about
suing
that.
Fortnite. Actually, yeah. You know, if that were, if that were an intellectual copy, how many games have copied Minecraft?
Oh, so many. Lost
Fortress
track.
Craft. You know, Fortress Craft, here's the thing. Fortress Craft started out as a tiny little indie game on Xbox, and it made over $1 million.
Oh my god, I'm reading this. This is UHC, ultra hardcore mode in Minecraft. This is a shrinking play zone, very few materials. This is exactly UHC in Minecraft.
Why
not? You over concept
can
like
you,
this.
Can you imagine, like, can you imagine if Sierra had tried to sue Telltale Games and every other and LucasArts and everyone else who tried to make a point and click game after Sierra?
It would have been ridiculous, yes.
Or if Microsoft and Mojang tried to sue Square Enix for making Dragon Quest Builders,
or Fortress Craft, you know. Right. And what they don't seem to understand is that you need people who do the same thing because it grows the interest.
Yes.
Because I'm going to tell you something. Little dirty little secret. Sony does not want Microsoft or Nintendo to fail, because if they fail, it's bad for them.
Competition is good for everyone.
Yes.
Just ask Electronic Arts and their sports games. They all suck except for the ones that actually have competition. I mean, all of EA's games that they have a monopoly on, or no one else cares, they suck. But the ones they actually have true competition in, FIFA, it's actually extremely good, because PES's Pro Evolution Soccer is pushing them to be.
Yeah, it's a multi-million-dollar franchise, and Konami put a ton of money into the newest PES last year. So yeah, EA has to play hard to stay ahead of the game.
And I know you're a PES fan.
I have that's my what my PS4 controller is. It's a PES branded one.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's absurdity. It's completely bonkers that after so long, no less.
What the judge is going to ask is, did they use any of your assets? No. Okay, get out of my court.
I mean, do they really expect Fortnite to stop doing what they're doing?
Epic could just say, okay, you know what? You're using our engine. Stop using our engine. Tell us how much it's going to cost you to rebuild the entire game with a different engine. Unreal Engine ain't cheap. As a matter of fact, I can tell you the story of the last game that Epic said, you can't use our engine. You remember that game?
Which one was that?
I'll give you a hint. That you had to destroy all the copies. It was too human.
Oh my god, it was too human.
They had to destroy all the copies on the store shelves.
I still have my copy, and I'm not going to let Epic come into my home and destroy it.
Technically, you're supposed to send
you're
it
gonna
and let them destroy
ground.
It.
Someday, if I ever have a chance to meet Epic, I'm going to bring my copy of Too Human with me and see if somebody will sign it.
They'll chuckle. Especially since, unfortunately, the game was supposed to be a trilogy and it sucked. And it basically brought down your Silicon Knights.
It had a lot of potential, I'll say that much. It was
a Diablo clone, you know? But they made the mistake of having control scheme that was bad, to say the least.
I didn't have an issue with it. Me and my friend played co-op in that game, and we found it to be pretty exhilarating.
Well, any game
like,
is good with co-op. I mean, Alien Colonial Marines is good with co-op.
The big issue that we had with it was that the campaign was like...
dull?
I guess about 8 hours long, you know, and by the time we got done with it, we're like, that's it? That's all?
Imagine if Blizzard took over that IP. Because they made Diablo 3 into a console game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, here's the thing. The advertising campaign for Too Human was excellent. Do you remember it? You had these scientists, and they were talking about finding something weird in the Arctic, you know, and they went into Norse mythology and all that stuff. I'm pretty sure somewhere on YouTube they have the old commercials for Too Human, in which it was really mysterious. It was almost like an ARG. It was great, but unfortunately the game sucked. I have the game somewhere too. I don't know where it is. Anyways, we're gonna move on to quickly. What have you been playing, Scott?
I've been playing Pillars of Eternity, Deadfire. I've been just playing that like nonstop this past week. Just
for the past 2 weeks.
Oh yeah, past 2 weeks. I've had some crashes, but I'm persevering through them.
It's an Obsidian game. Expect bugs.
Yeah, it does happen. Yeah, I'm waiting. Can't wait for the first patcher to come through and fix some of these stability issues. And I know that there's DLC coming, so I'm looking forward to that.
How do you can you detect how far you are into the game? Like, are you 2/3 through, or?
Yeah, I think about 2/3 through. I'm almost max level, but I haven't finished a lot of the main story. I've been doing all the side quest stuff, so I'm pretty close to done. Yeah, but I want to try to hold out for those DLCs so that way I can do those before finishing the game.
I was going back to an old goodie for something in particular this weekend. I was out at DreamHack Austin covering a lot of competitive gaming, and in the course of events, I had a hole in my schedule, and there was a Guilty Gear tournament out there. So
I can see where you could be like attention deficit ooh shiny about that.
I mean, like, I've never played in a live tournament. I've never had a I fancy myself pretty good, but I've never had a chance to like compete in in live action. So I went ahead and threw my hat into the ring. I did some practicing, got set up, and then I jumped into a tournament. I squashed the hell out of two competitors. It was a two set double elimination tournament.
Oh, let me guess. You played up to your level, and then the people. You got the people who thought they were good, and you smashed them, and then you hit a certain level, and they said, okay, let's show you how professional Guilty Gear goes.
I had the jitters in my first round, but I still won. Jitters went into my second round, but I lost, and I got squashed there against someone who was really good. I worked out my kinks, smashed the crap out of my third competitor, and then the fourth competitor I had, we actually had a really good match. I barely managed to lose, and he was really good. He ended up in the top eight, so I have no shame. I went 2-2, and in the first tournament, I showed off that I actually knew what I was doing.
Did you reveal that you were a video game journalist?
I did. I actually made some connections with quite a few people while I was there, and I might be playing with some of those people some more.
Excellent.
Are you going to join a clan? As a
No, it's a crew up in Austin that gets together, and actually they hang out at a place that I did a feature on.
Okay.
So,
because in Rebel FM, they keep on talking about all these Dota clans and like their sports teams, you know, it's like EG, you know, they talk about Evil Geniuses and these guys and those guys, you know, sort of like, it's just that I was wondering if you were joining a team that had a name, you know.
Not quite. Although I did make a connection with quite a few of those this weekend. DreamHack is considered to be one of the largest LAN events around. I think in 2012 they held the record for most setups at one event. Something like over 2,000. So DreamHack Austin is an extension of that. The DreamHack company is in Sweden. And this is sort of their American branch. It was fun. It was a really good time. I saw some great competition, got to talk to some great people, got to actually achieve one of my dreams that I've had for a long time and competing. So it was a good time.
So as for me, I've been playing a lot of Civ 6 lately. I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm just getting my freak on for Civ 6. I've also finished doing my Mass Effect trilogy. And one of the things that I noticed at the end, now I always knew that, you know, the three endings, you know, the three decisions you have are a dialogue wheel. Because, you know, up right is the Paragon choice, middle is the neutral choice, and lower right is the Renegade choice. And I just noticed that it was Captain Anderson in the preview for the Renegade choice, and the Elusive Man was doing the Paragon choice, which I thought was interesting. Of course, the Elusive Man keeps on talking about controlling the Reapers, right? Well, the upper left choice is, you know, control the Reapers, while destruction is the Renegade choice. So I thought that was interesting. I usually here's the thing. Before the extended cut came out, I always chose Synthesis. But after the extended cut, I found myself liking the Control ending a lot better. Because Shepard says he's going to be the guardian of the galaxy. He's going to be the guardian of the galaxy.
Not going to be. It's always a good thing.
There's no Rocket Raccoon, just him. And, you know, although what I love about the Synthesis ending is that Edie and Joker snuggle because now she's part organic and now she can actually do something with the camel toe that she has. That camel toe didn't have a purpose until now.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, also, you know, and but the thing is, I decided I'd rather have the Control because, you know, when I since the Quarians and the Geth make peace, you know, and the Quarians now have sentience, I didn't need to give them sentience because the only thing I regret is that with the Synthesis ending, you have this scene in which a husk attacks a guy, and after the green electricity goes by, he stops and looks around as if to say, "What am I doing? Who am I?" You know, it's sort of like he's now sentient. The husks now have their own, which is sort of creepy because a Praetorian is 30 husks jammed into a single shell. And I'm thinking, it's sort of like the Human Centipede in there, isn't it? The Scions, the cannibals, which are huskified Batarians, use a human husk as a gun. And I'm thinking, is the gun now going to start thinking since it's a separate being? You know? So it's just weird to think about. I don't want to think about it too much. My next game, it's coming from Gamefly, is going to be Sniper Elite 4. I've always had a special place in my heart for those games, even when they're bad, because how can you not like the bullet cam, the slow motion bullet cam, as it shows you what it's doing to the enemy's face, skull, shoulder, wherever you hit it, you know, in nice x-ray vision.
Man, they took that x-ray cam from Mortal Kombat 9 and 10 and just went all the way with it, didn't they?
Yeah, but it's cartoonish there. Here you're actually seeing realistic, you know, realistic damage, which makes it even more, you know, cringy. And, you know, I played Sniper Elite 3. It was fun. You know, the Sniper Elite 3 co-op was so good in which you have a sniper and a spotter. And it's a pity people didn't latch on to that because it was a really cool mode.
Yeah. That's always a gamble when you've got extensive like setups that make you think more than just shooting people for a shooter. Because it's just a fact of the matter is that a lot of shooting game players don't like to think.
Well, you know, here's the other thing, though. Sniper Elite 4 takes it further, though, in which unless you make it hard for yourself, all you need to do is turn on the light and boom, instant kill. You don't need to account for wind and all that stuff, although you can turn off those things and make you really have to account for wind, for distance, for gravity of the bullet, you know, and all that stuff. But I don't know how many people are going to do that, you know, and just hold your breath and shoot. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, I'll get my sick pleasure out of watching my sniper bullets ruin a person's day from 2 miles away. I'm just making their day a real hell, and I'm 2 miles away, just saying, okay, bye-bye.
Have you killed Hitler for the nth time yet?
Oh, God, no, I haven't. I try to kill Hitler in Sniper Elite 3, and it's shockingly hard to do. Because A, he runs like a motherfucker. So it's just hard to do. First, you have to spot him. And this is in 3. I haven't played 4. And spotting him is hard to do in some ways. Because he's also with his guards. And then once things go south, he just breaks for it.
Hashtag Hitler did trek.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the gaming flashback. Go ahead, TJ.
Alrighty. Our gaming flashback today is Blue Dragon. Blue Dragon was a role-playing game developed by Mistwalker and Artoon and published by Microsoft Game Studios exclusively for the Xbox 360. Blue Dragon was Mistwalker's debut title, and the first title to be helmed by Sakaguchi outside of Square Enix. It was the first of several JRPGs Microsoft released for the console, including Last Remnant, Lost Odyssey, Infinite Undiscovery, and Tales of Vesperia. Contributors to Blue Dragon include a number of well-known Japanese figures in the gaming industry. The title's original story was written by Sakaguchi, the game director for the first five Final Fantasy video games. It also featured art from Akira Toriyama, the creator of Dragon Ball, and visual and monster designer and illustrator of both Dragon Quest series and Chrono Trigger. Blue Dragon's score was composed and produced by Nobuo Uematsu, who is better known for composing much of the music in the popular Final Fantasy series. One of the boss themes, Eternity, was composed by Uematsu, with lyrics by Hironobu Sakaguchi himself, and includes vocals by English singer Ian Gillan.
A.K.A. the lead singer from Deep Purple.
Yeah. The gameplay of Blue Dragon uses turn-based gameplay elements seen in older Japanese role-playing video games. The game world contains two major types of areas, towns in which the player can rest and purchase items, and dungeon-like areas where numerous foes await to be defeated.
Now, here's the thing. This game actually was released in Japan a year before it was released in the United States, and it was so wanted that people bought in Japan an Xbox 360 just to play Blue Dragon.
Obviously, it didn't carry on.
But it was a must-play game in Japan. And I played it on launch because I was curious, and the game is the most JRPG of all the JRPGs. It is deliberately one long cliche of JRPGs. And it's fantastic. I mean, you know, there is a plot twist in it, because here's the thing. Most of the game revolves around the fact that you have a shadow, and I'm trying to remember the anime series that dealt with having a spirit that would fight with you. It wasn't Bleach. It was... Oh, God. I can't believe I forgot it.
Oh, I'm thinking of an alien thing, like Parasite.
I think I know.
Magi.
No, I don't know if that's it.
That way.
No, I think it's JoJo. Yeah, it's JoJo's Strange Adventures, or JoJo's...
JoJo's Bizarre Adventure is the one where people have these persona entities that follow them around.
So that's what these characters have. They have persona entities. A dragon, a bat, you know, and all that stuff. And I don't really want to get into spoilers here, but I will say that the main character, you could get drunk within an hour every time he says, "I won't give up."
Oh, yeah. I watched the 40 minutes of that video that you posted, and he said, "I won't give up," like every 5 minutes he was saying it.
But here's the thing. It's actually tied into the gameplay. He cannot flee from a battle. The game won't let him flee. He will stay and fight. You can't make him flee. Other characters can flee. He can't. It's part of the gameplay So that determination... I'm going to get into a spoiler here. So the main villain is Nene, who's this evil old guy, right?
He's a Piccolo and Saiyan armor-looking dude.
Yeah.
Anyways... The entire... spoiler here for an 11-year-old game. And, you know, this is actually a game you should play, so I feel uncomfortable about giving away this major plot twist. So you find out, halfway through the game, that you've been actually leveling up his monsters. And he takes them away from you and adds them to himself so he could be younger. And after that point, you lose... your shadow. It's called a shadow dragon, shadow bat, and all that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
But part of the thing is the main character is so I won't give up. Through sheer force of will, he regains his shadow dragon and doesn't require the device that he got from Nene to do it.
Yeah, it's the whole thing looks pretty neat, and the gameplay itself too also reminds me a little bit of in the way it's got like spacing and turn-based combat. Reminds me of Shining Force, which is one of my favorite series. Like,
whatever JRPG you like, this game has it, because it's one big long cliche, and that's its strength, is that it is so cliched, it goes around from being cliched to good.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a thing about, like, you can take all the things from other games, but as long as you take mostly good things, that's fine. Like,
and I think this still puts its own spin on the cliche. It has these spirit creatures that they use for magic, and a kid that apparently just won't give up. And
yeah, do you ever read one of those Pokemon comics about this character? It wasn't Ash; it was another character. And his entire thing was he would go berserk if he said something was impossible. He would go absolutely berserk, and he would do some really crazy shit, like throw someone half a mile away because he said it was impossible for him to do it, or stuff like that. It's just Lee Kara reviewed that comic, and it was just hilarious.
I immediately think of, like, okay, so, like, there's two major examples I look at when it comes to, like, taking stuff from other games and applying it to their own game. There's Retro City Rampage, which takes everything from other games and applies it to its game, the good and the bad. And that's annoying because they went ahead and put a level in there that was, like, the water level from the original Nintendo Ninja Turtles game. And that level sucks. It doesn't matter if you're making it as a joke. It's fucking annoying to play through that in any form. And putting it in your game just makes me annoyed. Whereas Shovel Knight is, like, totally a sort of Mega Man-styled retro platformer boss battle type thing. But it takes all the good things from those games and puts it together and, like, shirks off all of the garbage. And that's kind of what Blue Dragon looks like.
But here's the thing. This is different. In that Blue Dragon was made by an all-star roster of creators, so it isn't that they're copying anything retro. They're just taking the cliches that they themselves created. I mean, these guys are the ones who did Final Fantasy, the first five. It's theirs, you know? And this was an idea, actually, that Sakaguchi had for a long time, and Microsoft said, hey, guess what? We don't care what it is, just make it. And we're going to throw money at you, just do whatever you want. We want to make a JRPG for the Xbox 360, and we don't care how cliched it is. We trust you. Go ahead and do it. You know?
The Xbox 360 series of JRPGs are something I'd kind of like to see bundled and re-released, because they're all interesting in some way.
Lost Odyssey is backwards compatible. Actually, Blue Dragon is backwards compatible as well. 2 years ago it was announced, and somewhere I have a copy of it, and I'm just going to play through it again.
I had no idea that there was even a series of JRPGs or any RPGs on the Xbox 360 that wasn't already on PC. And so I feel like they just did not advertise
Infinite
this
Undiscovery,
stuff.
Oh, they advertised it. And Tales of Vesperia were really thunderstruck news.
I never
especially Tales of Vesperia.
Heard of these games until now.
You never heard of Tales of Vesperia? I mean, the Tales of series has been out for a while.
Yeah, Tales of Destiny. That comes from the same series as Tales of Destiny.
Let's talk about the music, because I made a special point to send you guys the music, and you can hear what Uematsu did with this series.
Yeah, it was really good, like the first song, I think.
The theme music.
It was really nice. It actually put me in the feel of an RPG, and I can imagine huge landscapes and the adventurers going over the land and traveling to different places. So, you know, it was fairly good music.
Now, the boss music sounds like something you'd hear out of Transformers. It was so retro. Even for 2007, that music was 1985, 1986. And watching some Western animated thing with Ian Gillan just yelling out those lyrics, you know, it's not something you expect. But on the other hand, a lot of the score has some seriously good heavy metal guitar riffs, you know. It tells me Uematsu really has his Black Sabbath t-shirt, you know, and the headband. just feels like he would be wearing those things.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you from listening to Final Fantasy 15, there are some really, really, really good...
rock riffs?
Yeah. Hiromatsu knows this stuff, whether it comes to the orchestral or whether it comes to just thrashing.
So, this also had a very popular anime series based on it, and it had two games for the Nintendo DS that Microsoft published. So, Microsoft knew what a property this was for Japanese audiences, and they actually developed the game. It wasn't the first game that they developed for a Nintendo title. I mean, they also did Zoo Tycoon and all that stuff. But yeah, just think about that. Microsoft made two games for the Nintendo DS based on this license.
That is impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
And now unexpected, too. I mean,
going into your enemy territory to fund a project is really, especially back then when the quote unquote console wars were still pretty thick.
You know, actually at that time I remember it was the Wii 360 because the PlayStation 3 cost as much as a Wii and a Xbox 360. So people would say, we'll just buy a Wii and a Xbox 360 and we'll have the same sort of stuff as a PlayStation 3. Remember when Sony announced a $600 PlayStation 3, it was just, oh, but you're going to get a Blu-ray drive, a disc drive with it. Yeah, whatever. I will say this, though. Maru, you want to take that little creep and just throw him against the wall because he has a high-pitched voice and he screams every line.
Yeah, it's really
He never shuts up. I hate him. And the thing is, he's a DV. It's a race in the game. And none of the other DV talk like him. They all talk normally. He's screaming.
He doesn't even know why he screams. They ask him, why are you screaming? He goes, I don't know.
Is he the porin looking dude?
He looks like a little teddy bear.
Okay, yeah. I'm sorry. I said porin. I meant Corrin. He looks like Corrin from Dragon Ball. Of course he does, because this is Akira Toriyama, and although Akira Toriyama is good at doing colorful things, he's very, very, very derivative in like what he does with his stuff.
Personally, I mostly saw the Dragon Quest influence in the artwork, in the character design, and all that stuff.
It seemed very Dragon Quest to me. Very strong of the Dragon Quest series.
I see that too. I just also see the Dragon Ball thing because, like, the main baddie, it looks like Garlic Jr.
The main baddie looks like every single manga old man enemy that you've seen.
Yeah,
he looks like Garlic Jr. with a Saiyan pauldron.
But like I said, if there's one Xbox 360 gay RPG that you need to play before you die, and I'm including this over Knights of the Old Republic, you got to try Blue Dragon. It just does everything cliched but right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you'll never feel bad about doing it. I will say, though, midway through the game, I found I had to grind. And people say, you don't grind. No, it's a JRPG. Of course you grind. At some point, you're going to have to grind to get past a certain thing. It's not as bad as Lost Odyssey, but there is a little bit of grinding. And I've never been a fan of the old JRPG random encounter thing, even in Pokemon, well, especially in Pokemon, in which you just stop and, oh, by the way, someone's attacking you and you can't get around it, and it's some cheap character. Why not? And it isn't the hard enemies that annoy me. It's the easy enemies, because I have to take time to take out things I can take out easily, but it still takes too much time. There should be an auto fight in which you can just auto fight this if I'm two levels above it. Please don't make me have to fight it.
Yeah, that's one feature that's like they've finally put that in the re-releases of like Final Fantasy VII and IX. After a while, you could actually like. You could flip off there was an option to flip off fights in general.
I like to flip off. There's a lot of things about JRPGs I like to flip off.
Well, there's a switch that lets you turn off fights altogether and just enjoy the story, and I think that's pretty nice for a time saver.
I don't think there's ever been as bad grinding as Final Fantasy I or Dragon Quest I, where you just literally walk in a little area fighting monsters just to level up so you can fight the next boss.
The worst I've ever seen is Legend of Dragoon, where you have like a little indicator above your head that like changes from blue to yellow to red, and then after a second you get into a fight, and it's just, it's unnerving, and like just you stare at it the whole time just because like, damn it, it's gonna happen, and there's nothing I can do about it.
I blame Gary Gygax because he was the one who did these stupid random encounters in D&D, and a lot of JRPGs take after D&D. They take a lot of stuff from D&D and Ultima, two major influences in early JRPGs. You know, if you played Ultima, you played the first Ultima, which was Ultima 3, you know, on NES, you can see where they took a lot of what was from Ultima and just put it in that game. And from that, JRPGs sprung forth in their style, you know, for the most part. So I blame Gary Gygax.
Wherever. Damn you, right, Gary Gygax.
Yeah. How dare you make... Roll for a random encounter. You know, as a human DM, you can just say, no, I'm not going to do a random encounter. Only my players are bored.
Well, if they're trying to abuse something and, you know, you don't want them to sleep in a certain area, you can warn them you might incur a random encounter and then have them decide that. But, I mean, that's the nice thing about D&D. You have a human DM that can use discretion to decide when certain rules should and shouldn't apply. When you have it done in a video game, the video game just does the things and there's no arguing with it.
Now, the reason why I brought up Blue Dragon for this week's gaming flashback is there's a rumor that Microsoft's going to announce a new Blue Dragon for the Xbox One. So here's crossing our fingers that is an announcement, because I would love to see another Blue Dragon.
I would totally play it. And I can see it, too. They would want something to compete with Ni No Kuni, which is a PlayStation exclusive right now.
Well, they're talking about right now. Phil Spencer is talking about now's the time that Microsoft's going to start focusing on JRPGs, and why not use the one that you actually own the license to?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense.
If Microsoft really wanted to make people go, whoa, imagine if they announced Blue Dragon for Xbox One and Switch.
I would play the hell out of it. I'm going to be playing Dragon's Quest XI when that comes out in September, I think. So that'll be my JRPG for this year.
So anyways, we're going to move on to game news. The first news item is Capcom registers Devil May Cry 5 site fueling E3 2018 rumors. And this is from Game Rant. And just a little hint, all of the news items have something to do with E3. They all do. So this is a week away from E3, so get ready. We're going to go in hip. We're going to have to put on our hip waders because we're going to do a lot of E3 stuff, especially now with the rumors, which are the most interesting ones, although one was a rumor that was revealed. So anyways, over the past few days, the internet has been awash with rumors about an upcoming Devil May Cry 5 announcement. One of the biggest hints about that the game is about to be officially revealed came from a leak about PlayStation E3 2018 press conference, which indicated that DMC5 would be one game shown off alongside Bloodborne 2 and several others. I can see your heart on from here, TJ. Mentioning Bloodborne 2 just gave you a chubby right now, didn't it?
Well, geez.
maybe not a literal one, but a mind boner.
I would absolutely play it. It's the only, I think at this point, it's the only new thing that I would be interested in.
Okay. Well, they said they were done with Dark Souls, but, you know, that doesn't mean they're not going to, you know, Sony's going to give them a ton of cash and say, here's Bloodborne, make another Bloodborne, please. People liked it. Yeah. And, you know, Bloodborne, the first Bloodborne, may have been a big game, but it was also a lot smaller than the other Dark Souls games. It was a huge game, but compared to a Dark Souls game, it was tiny. So I can see them reusing some assets, making some new levels, some new creatures, boom. Get your blood gems out. Anyways, the latest indication that Devil May Cry 5 is about to be confirmed comes from Capcom itself. It appears that the owner of Devil May Cry series has now registered a domain name, a website name, for the game. DevilMayCry5.com, which is registered on May 18th, will likely serve as the hub for all marketing related to the title, assuming the game is, of course, real. Now, GMO Internet Group has a long-standing connections with Capcom. The company was also listed as the registrar for MonsterHunterWorld.com and ResidentEvil7.com, the official sites for the respective games, suggesting that when Capcom wants to register a domain for a game, it gets GMO Internet Group to do it. Interestingly enough, GMO Internet Group has also registered ResidentEvil2.com, hinting that there's a remake of Resident Evil 2 maybe coming around the corner, too. As mentioned, there are plenty of tidbits that point to Devil May Cry 5 being announced soon, in addition to the PlayStation E3 2018 press conference leak and the domain name news. A product listing for the game was also published prematurely by an online retailer. I'm going to guess that was Amazon. And the listing claims that the game will be released in 2018, which I would take it with a grain of salt, because we've seen this before. They'll list December 31st, 2018, which means we don't know when. We're just putting a placeholder date in there.
We also saw that. It was at Twin Galaxies. It was Canadian Walmart.
So here's the thing. I guess this means there's not going to be a DMC 2. And a lot of people... Here's the thing. It had better gameplay, but people weren't in love with the fact it was a reboot and a new character. So I guess if Devil May Cry 5 is coming out, we're going to see Dante. Capcom is one big whore. If you don't pay them, they're going to make it multi-platform. So I'm willing to bet you it's also going to be for Xbox One, PC, and possibly Switch.
That would make sense, because Devil May Cry 4 was on Xbox.
And everything else. If there was a system, it was on it. And besides which, Sony's getting their bone with they're getting their incentives with Bloodborne 2. That's their exclusive game that they're gonna harp about.
I must have had my head buried in the sand somewhere, because outside of the quote unquote leaks that have been saying Devil May Cry 5, I hadn't seen anything that like in any capacity suggested an official. An official hint at Devil May Cry 5 until now.
The only thing I care about is Bayonetta 3 is remaining on Switch. And I'm hoping there's a PC version of Bayonetta 2 and 3 coming. Because I'm not going to buy a Switch just to play Bayonetta. But I love Bayonetta a lot more than Devil May Cry.
Mm-hmm. I've always I like Devil May Cry 4 a lot. Nero was a good addition to the series, which he was sort of the Raiden of Devil May Cry 4.
As much. I mean, you had white hair and black hair. Go. That's but fine. It's really... fine to have Dante have his opposite number. That's fine. I mean, that's with Bayonetta and Jean as well. I mean, they're both opposite numbers too. Which I'm pretty sure they got from Devil May Cry 4. At some point, there's going to have to be a Dante Bayonetta crossover, somehow.
Yeah. I mean, if they wanted to throw money at it, they could totally make it happen. But
do you care?
I'm here.
I'm saying, do you care? Do you care about the Devil May Cry games or any of the genre?
I played the first one, but it's just. I don't know. It's just like a massive slash and hack and slash game, so it didn't really hook me all that much. I didn't know how many games they had. I just knew that they had like at least three or something. I like the music, you know, but it just I don't know. It just seems like a very shallow game. It just doesn't really hook me. There's no story to sink my teeth into.
Right. So the thing about Devil May Cry and Bayonetta is that the story is really, really campy.
Yeah.
And self-aware and goofy. You know, and they like to make jokes. I mean, they make Halo jokes.
A lot of pandering.
I mean, it's not far removed.
They make Sonic the Hedgehog jokes in Bayonetta, talking about Eggman.
Dante's attitude isn't far removed from Bruce Campbell.
No.
And that is
except
always
a lot more asshole-ish.
And that has always been... I don't know. I think they're about on the same. But
here's the thing. You know, at least Ash Williams is an idiot. And that's why he's so cocky. And he does get his face punched in several times because he's an idiot. The only thing he knows how to do is to fight the Deadites. That's the only thing he can do well. Everything else he's a complete and utter failure at, except maybe selling at S-Mart. But I don't know how good a salesman he is. We don't know how long he's been working at S-Mart, okay? He doesn't get the babe.
If I'd seen him handle that shotgun at S-Mart at the end of Army of Darkness, I would have considered buying it. I just saw a good product demonstration.
But Scott, the thing is that the gameplay itself is both simple and complex. I mean, you can just do attack, dodge, attack, dodge, attack, dodge, attack, dodge, and get away with it.
But if you won't get triple stylish that way.
Yeah, you don't get if you want the stylish points, then you can do a lot of different complicated stuff. I mean, it's okay. You have to be in the mood for it. I mean, I'd rather play Bayonetta any day of the week than God of War. Any of them, because at least Bayonetta likes life. She is happy. I don't need Lara Croft be confusing her determination with just being a dull bore.
Yeah,
Bayonetta could say flock off.
I really did enjoy Devil May Cry 4 quite a bit, just because Nero was plucky and all like regular hero protagonist looking to look after his gal. And then Dante
4 to me was like the prequel to Bayonetta. I mean, everything they did in Devil May Cry 4 you'd find in Bayonetta.
And yeah, and Dante was the veteran. He just gave no shits. Yeah. And it was fun to see like and it was really fun when you finally got to they had a little rivalry battle between them, and it was a good fight.
Well, you do that with Jean in Bayonetta too. I mean, like I said, I sort of liked Devil May Cry 4, but I think part of it was that it was in my introduction to the series of that type of game. Not just Devil May Cry, but, you know, the God of War type of, you know, hack and slasher, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when I was introduced to Bayonetta, I said, yeah, I like this. So, yeah, I mean, I have gotten into the genre lately. I'm just not sure if I'm in love with the characters of Devil May Cry, no matter how well written or badly written they are. I mean, I'll give it a chance, but, you know, Bayonetta is where my heart is.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been a Devil May Cry fan, and I like.
In your mouth. See, I'm gonna borrow Paul's line there. That's because your teeth is in your mouth.
For me, I feel like I'm kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum. I feel like Bayonetta is kind of just like a copycat of everything that makes Dante cool.
Well, here's the thing. I was raised by drag queens, and Bayonetta reminds me of every drag queen I've ever known.
Oh, she is stylish as fuck. There's no doubt about that.
She is a diva. That's why they call, by the way, the nickname for Bayonetta, the Bayonetta games, is Diva May Cry. We're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
All right. Ubisoft confirms E3 reveal of Assassin's Creed Odyssey. This is from GameSpot. Confirming rumors, Ubisoft has announced Assassin's Creed Odyssey. The announcement was made with a short teaser clip and a logo, where a helmet occupies the central spot that the Eye of the Horus sat for Assassin's Creed Origin. The tease is short, but promises a more extended look at E3 2018. Rumors began circulating today after a purported promotional keychain with the title appeared. It appeared to imply this game would take place in ancient Greece or Rome, which this tease also supports. Last year's Origins features some Greco-Roman architecture, characters, and political intrigue. This would also appear to put Assassin's Creed back on the annual schedule. After Assassin's Creed Syndicate release in 2015, Ubisoft notably took a year off to give the next franchise entry more time. Assassin's Creed Origin was a result, and it benefited from the extra time, according to the critical consensus on GameSpot sister site Metacritic. Ubisoft's press conference will take place on Monday, June 11th at 1 p.m. Pacific time and 4 p.m. Eastern time, and presumably that's where we'll see more of Odyssey.
You know,
so I wonder if you get to assassinate Julius Caesar.
But here's the thing. That was that year off. Apparently, was not an artistic decision. It was more like we're going to make a new engine, and that's why they took the year off.
Well, and good. Maybe they needed that time then.
If you saw the little clip, it's hysterical. It's like the kicking someone off the mountain from 300.
I haven't seen the clip.
The clip from 300 where the guy kicks him out into the hole?
Kicks him off. Well, in this case, they're kicking him off a cliff. So it makes me think it's going to be Greek. Which makes sense. You know, you're going from Egypt to Greece. And, you know, here's the thing. I hope they have less boring in Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Oh, by the way, the name actually gives it away. It has to be Greek if you're talking about Odyssey.
Yeah, if they're going the Argonaut route.
Yeah.
I mean, you can always go from there to the Romans in the next game.
Yeah. But you already threw giant scorpions in your last Assassin's Creed game.
But you don't need scorpions with the Greeks.
You do if you're going to do the Odyssey. You got to have the giant scorpions.
Well, here's the thing. Yeah. Now, if you know anything about Assassin's Creed, the reveal that all the ancient Greek gods were aliens. So I'm wondering if in Assassin's Creed Odyssey you're going to actually directly interact with these aliens. Remember, Juno, well, that's actually a Roman name, so I wonder if you have to wait another game before you do it. Was it Juno in Assassin's Creed that he talked with? I'm trying to remember. I know it was an ancient god who was actually an alien woman. And that was all, by the way, my favorite part of the entire series, is that Ezio goes and activates this thing, and she appears, this goddess appears, Juno, I'm going to assume for now, I'm probably wrong, and she starts talking to the player, and Ezio's going, who are you talking to? And it's like, we're talking to Desmond Miles. She's not talking to Ezio, she's talking to Desmond Miles, which was actually a cool, creepy moment, because it was just like, and staring at the camera and talking to Desmond Miles, a.k.a. the player. So yeah, I'm lukewarm about Assassin's Creed. I mean, Origins just was dull. It was just so regressive. I mean, did you guys play Origins?
Nope. I haven't really played any of them.
The only one I've ever played was Assassin's Creed... The third one in the Assassin's Creed.
God, that's the wrong one to end. That's the worst entry point you could possibly pick.
Hold on.
Is that the Civil War one? Or the Revolutionary War?
The Civil War one was, yeah, the American Civil War was number 3. Black Flag was number 4. That was the one with the pirate ships.
Mm.
2 was the one that was in Italy. And that's where it really got good. But I personally liked the first one.
It was Brotherhood. That's the one I played. It was where they first brought in that multiplayer mechanic, which I thought was neat, but the game was boring.
But you see, actually, it wasn't... Here's the thing.
That was the most plaguiest one, wasn't it?
Assassin's Creed 1 was not boring. When you did
it... No.
When you did an assassination, everybody was... you had to find a way to hide, and it was hard to hide. It was like you had the entire city going after you, and you had to find a place to hide, but the problem was that there was always someone near eyesight, so it's sort of like a frantic run. It was glorious. In the first Assassin's Creed, everything else was but that part was really great. After you do your assassination, you got to get out of there.
My wife really wanted Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, even though we didn't play any of the other ones, and so we went after it and we gave it a go. And I could go about, 5 hours into it before it started turning into the things that Assassin's Creed does, which it demands that you go and climb the tallest towers to get a look at everything, and then it makes you do these
This is a case in which you had to be there from the start. I mean, having played Assassin's Creed 1 and 2 and the sequels to 2, you know, 2, I'm going to tell you something. You haven't played Middle-earth Shadow of War or Shadow of Mordor, but 2 is actually, if you ever play Shadow of Mordor, it's like, oh, this seems familiar, you know?
That makes me not want to play Shadow of Mordor.
You gotta play Shadow of Mordor and Shadow of War. They're so good. It takes Batman Arkham Asylum and makes it even, adds magic to it.
You should have said that instead of Assassin's Creed.
Well, the Assassin's Creed part is the exploration, but the Nemesis mechanic is so good. It's a revolution in video games. I'm going to tell you right now, the orc captains who have their own personality, and let me give you a hint. When you walk up to one, say you could have been riding a Caragor. So, you know, the Caragor is sort of like a lizard lion, right? So he'll react different ways if you approach him riding a Karagor, hop onto a Karagor, or get off on a Karagor. He will have a separate response for each one, commenting on what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And Shadow of War just takes it up to 11. It's just... It is so... we're talking about games that you have to play at least once before you die. Middle-Earth Shadow of Mordor and Middle-Earth Shadow of War are both games you have to... And by the way, they removed the loot boxes from Shadow of War, and they closed the market. And I never spend a penny in the market. You know, I only spend in-game currency. So they're going to be doing something new with that. I'm interested to see what they're going to do. I think there's something doing something for, say, June 5th, I want to say. I'm not sure. But yeah, and also now with all the DLC. Hey, you know what? Maybe at some point they're going to release a Middle-Earth complete set, which includes both games with all the DLC included. Then you really should hop in. Because I'm going to tell you something. There are these games that you play 6 or 7 years later, and you find out why people were so high on them. You know? This is one of those games.
Yeah.
I'm so impressed. Let's move on to the next item. This is you, TJ.
Rumor, Microsoft to reveal 3, count them 3, Gears of War games at E3 from Polygon. According to Polygon, Microsoft could be planning to announce 3 wildly different games under the Gears of War umbrella. One of these is allegedly Gears of War 5. It's a given that this game is in development, though with Gears of War 4 only releasing 2 years ago, it's unlikely its successor would be ready for 2018. The second rumored game would be a real-time strategy title in the same vein of the 2 Halo Wars spin-offs. Given the amount of lore and history written into the Gears of War series already, this seems like the perfect opportunity to explore less familiar territory.
And here we go, the third one.
The third game is rumored to be a Battle Royale title, because of course it is. which shouldn't come as a huge surprise. Gears of War 4's multiplayer was better received than its campaign mode, and expanding this to include 100 players could transform how people play. With any luck, it will be a free offering, as the recent success of Fortnite Battle Royale has shown that that's the best way to attract new players.
I don't know, because here's the thing about Gears of War multiplayer. It's a 4-on-4 sort of thing, and it actually shows that you don't need a lot of players to make something exciting, because it's a lot more intimate and the deaths are a lot more graphic, you know? Mm-hmm. And so taking out like somebody Overwatch. Is just... What?
It sounds more like Overwatch, where you have a squad versus a squad.
Yeah, but here's the thing. The Gears characters are slow and ponderous, and there's a lot of strategy involved.
Mm-hmm.
It's like mobilizing a couple of tanks.
Yeah, it's they started the cover-based shooter mechanic because they're giant meatheads with stacks of armor on them. They can't just dart and jump around the place. They can't even jump. They have a dive at best.
But they have a chainsaw gun, damn it. And that's one of the things when you do it against another player, it's so satisfying.
When they added Chainsaw Wars and Gears of War 3, like just like the back and forth button mash to see who wins, it was really, 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 really satisfying when you come through. I would love to see a strategy game, because you've already got four built-in factions for that.
Wait. The Locusts, the Humans, the Outcasts?
The Lambent.
Lambent, yeah. Are the Outcasts considered a faction, then?
I would consider the Outcasts a little bit of a faction.
Okay.
I mean, that might be stretching it, but you've at least got 3 major factions to deal with. It
sounds a little like, I don't know, StarCraft?
Yes.
Well, let's see. The Lambent, I guess, could be the Zerg-type units.
Absolutely. You got those, which are just, like, basically swarmers, suicide agents, all sorts of just, like... Overwhelm and destroy. Humans would be more would be a little bit more balanced, and then the locusts themselves would be tactical. What with subterranean, and they got the giant monsters as well.
Yeah, you forgot that female creature that's blind and just goes and just likes to just pound people into dirt when they hear them.
Uh huh.
You know, those brothers, those brothers, poor Carmine brothers.
Yeah.
They all managed to meet their end in each game.
Except for C, Carmine, because they voted him a lot. They voted him to life. What a cool thing. That was like, did they have a D, Carmine? Did they do that with Gears of War?
Yes, they did.
That was just something that you could only have from having that kind of lore that people were that people cared about. I don't know if anyone knows, but for Gears of War 3, before they released the game, they had a vote, and it was, should C. Carmine survive the game or not? And sure enough, people overwhelmingly voted for C. Carmine to live. And so it was like something that, like, spoiler on this game, but like, they didn't reveal it until the last second, and it looked real iffy for a moment there, and then he comes through right in the last scene of the game.
Well, that's good, because Dominic doesn't. Spoilers. Mm-hmm. Dominic is just depressed and drunk, although I would be after the events of 2 myself.
Oh my god.
What happens to him, it's like, oh god.
That dude had a bad time.
Yeah, and by the way, I know Carlos Ferro, the voice actor. We gave him the Game Stooge Award for his acting work in Gears of War 2. So, here's the thing, is that I have not played 3 or 4 of Gears of War, because after 2, I just said, I'm done, you know. It has its place in history, so I'd be very interested to see what a Gears of War 5 would be like. And having a free-to-play Gears of War Battle Royale, I want to see. For Massive, I think it would be 20 on 20 for meatheads. You know, 40 meatheads, not hundreds. Just 40 is like too many. The question is, of course, would you get extra points for chainsawing someone, bisecting them like they do? Rumor, Rocksteady to announce a Superman game at E3, and this comes from some comicbook.com. A new Superman game from Rocksteady of Batman Arkham fame may be revealed soon, according to a supposed leak on 4chan. According to the post, the game will be revealed as the cover story of next month's Game Informer magazine. There are additional details as well. The listing notes that the game will make its debut at Microsoft's E3 conference, which is set to take place on Sunday before the show kicks off. It'll feature gameplay being demonstrated on Microsoft's Xbox One X hardware. It'll possibly be with a reveal trailer that shows Brainiac assaulting Metropolis, sounding a little like Injustice 2, which, you know, sort of weakens the rumor a bit, with Superman being weakened from battle. The gameplay will demonstrate both flying and combat, as Superman will be able to soar through the air and take on grounded and airborne enemies. In this particular case, he'll be taking out some of Brainiac's drones as they invade, possibly in a similar manner to Batman's combat. The listing also points to a dedicated page for the Superman game, although nothing is coming up at the moment. It indicates that it'll go live shortly after the game's introduction. An interesting note about the site, though, according to the Domain Tools listing, it was updated in February of this year. So this is 4chan, which means there's a 40% chance this is real. I would not be surprised. Here's the thing. 5 years ago at E3, I actually talked to the Rocksteady developers, and I told them, you know, here's how you could make a Superman game work. And I went through all these things. So it'll be interesting to see if they actually took my advice, if they actually are making a Superman game. So, what do you think?
The wonderful thing about a Superman game is that the last Superman game was so bad that you don't have a high bar to clear.
Well, there's actually 2 games before Superman 64 that were pretty bad, too. I assume that the next Superman game would be sort of a Telltale-type game, in which, you know, you don't have direct control of what Superman does, just his decisions, you know.
Yeah, because he's a god. You start from a place of like, you start from a place where you already are the best at everything.
Now here's the thing: the last Superman game actually went with the idea that it isn't that Superman's getting hurt, it's that Metropolis is getting hurt, and the more Metropolis gets hurt, the worse off you are, and once it reaches a certain level, you lose.
Man, Zack Snyder would have lost in a jiffy.
Yeah, well, we don't need an objectivist Superman, thank you very much. Superman has always been an altruist, through and through. He doesn't save lives because of what it gets him. He does it because it's the right thing to do. It's always been that way. And his parents never said, "They don't owe you a thing, Clark." Oh, fuck you, Martha. You should have gotten Charcold.
Martha?
I shouldn't have saved you. Why did you say that name? Yeah. are we waiting for the Aquaman movie? It's still coming.
Mm-hmm.
I want my superheroes to be happy. Not happy killing people, just happy, as in bright, as in Bayonetta. She kicks ass, but she never loses, you know, she never loses her sense of humor. So.
It's all about Bayonetta. She's the best.
Mm-hmm. Remember, do you ever play the original Superman game on the Atari 2600?
No, but I've seen it. Like, as far as my job goes, I have to see, I've seen the records that people have set in that game, and oh my god. I cannot figure out what the hell is going on.
It's a clever game, actually. You have to collect pieces of a satellite and get them together while a kryptonite satellite is chasing you, and you have to turn. What I like is that the game actually you have to change from Clark Kent to Superman. You have to go into the phone booth and change, which is a nice little touch.
I'm glad that there's probably a manual on this, and I haven't read it. So I'm glad that you know, because as anyone who should know about Atari should know, it's just vague shapes.
Yeah.
And so it's very difficult if you weren't there. Basically, if you weren't there, you probably don't know.
You know what?
If you didn't have a manual, you were screwed a lot of the times.
Now that I think about it, E.T. is a ripoff of Superman. The game, I mean, the Atari 2600, because everything you do in E.T. is the same as you do in in the Superman 2600 game.
Well, that game was made in, what, a month or something? So they probably just ripped off the mechanic and put on the E.T. dress.
I love the box art for the Atari 2600 game, too.
Mm-hmm. So,
are we hoping for a Superman? I mean, if someone's going to do it, Rocksteady seems like the ideal people to do it because they would have to think about this stuff. I mean, you have to understand, when Batman Arkham Asylum was announced, people were like, okay, we need a superhero.
That's because there had been it was another situation where there had been a lot of bad Batman games before Arkham Asylum.
Yeah, the only good one, I think, was Batman Forever? I think that was on the SNES.
There was a couple beat 'em ups that weren't bad.
Yeah. But people, you know, they shocked everybody with not only the gameplay, which was taking Arkham, which was taking Assassin's Creed and just amping it up, you know, adding counters and also devices, but they also did a great Batman Joker story. The only thing I don't like is that they changed Harley Quinn from having that Harlequin outfit to always dressing like a naughty nurse. You know, I'd like to see her back in a Harlequin outfit, damn it.
Yeah, and, you know, I think about that, and I really do think that having the voices in there for
Batman the Animated Series, yeah.
I think that helped. I think if they were going to do another Superman game, I kind of think I'd want to have Tim Daly back.
Oh, really? And not George Newbern, who did the voice for several of the animated films? I mean, he is the voice of Sephiroth, I get it, but
I really like Tim Daly. There's something just about him that's just like that. Tim Daly has that thing of that fits Superman so well, where he knows he's better than you, but he's not going to tell you that to your face.
I like George Newbern, though. He has a sort of a quality in which he has a humbler quality to him. That's sort of like, yeah, I can kick your ass, but I'm not that much better than you.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say this. Now, wouldn't it be crazy if the Superman game had a cameo from Kevin Conroy himself? You know, have Batman appear briefly in it.
That would be neat.
Yeah. Just don't include Joker. I'm tired of the Joker. We don't need Joker. Give Mark Hamill a day off.
Yeah, even Mark Hamill seems like he's tired of the Joker to a certain degree.
Getting back to the actual podcast, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Play games, be cool, watch Tron Legacy.